Blog Talk Radio.
What an incredible Cinderella story. This unknown comes out of nowhere to lead the pack at Augusta. He's on his final hole. He's about 455 yards away. He's going to hit about a 2-iron, I think. Well, we got all of that. The crowd is standing on his feet here at Augusta. The normally reserved Augusta crowd. Going wild. For this young Cinderella, who's come out of nowhere, he's got about 350 yards left. He's going to hit about a 5-iron, I expect, don't you think? He's got a beautiful backswing. He got all of that one. He's got to be pleased with that. The crowd is just on his feet here. He's a Cinderella boy. Tears in his eyes, I guess, as he lines up this last shot. He's got about 195 yards left, and this crowd has gone deadly silent. Cinderella story, out of nowhere. A former greenskeeper now about to become the Masters champion. It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole!
Oh, baby. It is the Off the Wall podcast here on Blog Talk Radio and then living the rest of the day on YesNetwork.com. It's Chris Sheer and my buddy Joe Oriamadre yesterday with Billy Sample. Talk about his new movie, Reunion 108. And today, one of Mr. Sample's former broadcast partners joins us, a friend of the show, and that is Mr. Seth Everett. So, Seth, welcome aboard. Thanks for joining us here on the Off the Wall podcast today.
How do I follow Billy Sample? Well, the film was 1976, Mickey River.
Not only did you follow Billy Sample, you also followed Billy Murray as we welcome in everyone on Masters Thursday here, the former greenskeeper about to become Masters champion.
There you go. That's right. And champions were never won on Thursday, but they can be lost.
Yes, they can. Very eloquently put there, Mr. Everett. So I like to call you the hardest working man in broadcasting. There's just so much. Well, you work for so many entities, and you're all over the place. I mean, who do you want to hit? I mean, I know you do Fox Sports Radio. I know you did a couple of hits for Nesson on opening day at Yankee Stadium. Is there anybody else you want to throw out there as well?
Oh, to promote? Well, I'm happy to
absolutely
be a guest on the Off the Wall podcast. I do a lot of different things in New York because a lot of your listeners are in New York. You can hear me on 1010 Wins. You can occasionally hear me on WFAN. What else? I don't know. All around friend of Chris Sheeran.
You do so much that you can't even remember.
If you're on the internet, go to Spreecast.com. You can see
some
of the web shows. There you go.
Absolutely.
I have a new purple producer. Guy by the name of Prince, so that's been kind of cool.
I was thinking Barney. I'm in kid mode, I guess. But yeah, you did talk to us about that.
You told me, you said we're going to do the Cinderella thing for the Masters, and I'm like, is this love? I'm like, because I have girls. I'm locked in to Cinderella. I'm like,
I have two girls too. So yeah, we're both in the same boat, and it's going to be the Titanic in about 12 years. So. For more reasons than one, but let's get to business here really quickly.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not really a golf guy per se, but you know, this elusive major for Tiger, it's been a while for him, but he's been playing some really good golf lately. Do you, if you have an opinion on this, do you think he could, not really, I hate in the sports vernacular, says shock the world, because people in Kuala Lumpur could give a damn who wins the Masters, but well, maybe they do. I don't know, but I'm just guessing. But do you think Tiger can get it done this week?
No, he can. And here's the thing. What I think is the more interesting discussion on Tiger Woods is how people say they don't like him, but yet root for him. Or they say they don't like him because, and they're not sure why. You know, a lot of people in the sports vernacular are not exactly sure what he did. What, he cheated on his wife with a bunch of women? That suddenly changes your impression of him, because I'll tell you what, you go to any major league ballpark and I'll find you 10 guys that cheat on their wives. You know, so Is that the new standard for how we're evaluating this? So my argument, and I have some friends over at the Golf Channel, and I tease them all the time because I don't get why they work as hard when Tiger's not playing, because a third of the people will be seeing it. So, like, when you're putting together your features, I'm like, you know, you guys got to be real here because this is the Masters, and Tiger might win. People are going to be watching your stuff. So that's exactly the way where this goes. And so, to me, that's the argument, is that we can all sit here and pontificate about just exactly who Tiger Woods is. Bottom line is golf needs him, and golf's not ready to say goodbye to him because they don't have the plan for post-Tiger.
You got that right. I mean, no one, you know, I was listening to Chris Russo, as I normally do, and on a daily basis whenever I'm in my car on the satellite radio, and Chris brought up a great point about the number one ranking in golf. How many guys have been ranked number one in the past couple of months?
Right.
You can name a handful of them. I mean, so to go with what you're saying, golf is definitely not ready for the post-Tiger era.
No, and they say that they're okay, and that's a bunch of PR nonsense. And the reality of it is that, you know, for what everybody says, and this has a lot to do with names. We're actually I did a study about a year ago about names, and sometimes when you have a catchy name, you suddenly become a bigger figure than life. Tiger Woods was Tiger Woods when he was a little kid, before he had done anything. And people were like,
on the Tonight Show, yeah.
Right, the guy, he's Tiger. Like, the guy's name is Tiger. You know, the best analogy of that is Jabba Chamberlain. Guy
right.
named after a Star Wars character immediately became known.
Right.
He was Jabba. He was known as a first name basis before he had thrown a major league pitch.
Jabba rules, yeah.
Right, the Jabba rules, which, by the way, reminds me of the great T-shirt I ever saw at Coors Field during the 07 World Series when Ubaldo Jimenez was playing pitching well, and there was guys with black T-shirts and purple writing saying, the Ubaldo rules. I love that T-shirt.
Well, Ubaldo got lit up by the Yankees the other night, and let's go to baseball now, Seth. And something that we were texting each other back and forth, and I didn't want you to rush the bit on. You know, we talk about the Yankees ad nauseum, obviously, on Off the Wall because it is a Yes Network based podcast. But
I would hope so.
I'd like to branch out a little bit. We'll talk a little Yankees too, but I first and foremost, I want to pick your brain about what you said is very interesting with the Angels and their slugger, Albert Pujols, in his second year with the team. Now, he's gotten out to a fast start with the Halos. The team hasn't, but Pujols has at the dish. And he was playing DH. I was assuming that's where you were going with this. So what are your thoughts on this? You know, he doesn't want to play DH. He thinks he's too young and he's too talented. What are your thoughts on him being a DH?
Well, there's a couple of things there. What I was referring to in our little texting game, and yes, this wasn't like in the middle of the night texting, like, clean this up. Just understand. Like, we're pals. We're not necessarily talking all the time here. Albert came out and said during the first homestand that his purpose this season is to prove that his contract is not an albatross. And that made me feel like he doesn't think he's all the way back. And that's where this conversation started, because what I will tell you in 18 years of covering baseball, I understand Jared Weaver's injury. I understand how long it's going to take, and I understand what kind of a hit that is to the Angels. I even get Josh Hamilton and whether or not he would get off to a fast start. But Pujols makes no sense to me, because this is a guy that, unless there's something physically wrong with him or there's some kind of artificial factors in here, Albert Pujols is the best player in this sport. And for him to have the season he had last year and to talk about his contract being an albatross is one of the great things, great mysteries in modern Major League Baseball.
Well, do you think he looks at a guy like Alex Rodriguez and he sees what he's become to the Yankees? I mean, he can't stay on the field, and when he does get to the field, he's not 100%. So maybe he sees that, and he knows his contract rivals that contract, so maybe he's trying to just posture himself. Do you get that kind of sense? Like,
yeah,
he doesn't want to be made out to be another Alex Rodriguez?
But the issue is when Alex first signed the first contract, his first two seasons in Texas, he was great. Now, granted, he was doing the Bowley in the DR with the loosey-goosey and the whole thing. But the fact of the matter was is he came out and hit like gangbusters. So that was never the discussion. I always thought that the primary, and I think we talked about this, you and I always thought the story of 2012 was why the Angels didn't win. And no offense to Texas, but they won by default. They won actually Oakland won it, but they won because the Angels didn't. And that, to me, was the big story in baseball this year. So, you know, that's why I thought coming into it, the Angels have a ton of pressure. Now, not as much pressure as the Dodgers do, but the Angels, to me, have to win. I mean, how do they not win with the pieces that they have?
Absolutely, Seth. And, you know, the pieces that they do have aren't on the mound, that's for sure. And as you said, they take a big hit with Weaver going down for 4 to 6 weeks. And you said you have knowledge of this injury. So is that a good timetable to look at, 4 to 6 weeks for Weaver being on the show?
Yeah, because it's his non-pitching hand, and he's going to be able to do throwing, you know, very, 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 as soon as the bone, you know, begins to heal, he'll be able to throw. So what I was trying to explain was we've seen that injury before, and we know what that is. What my issue is that when you're talking about things that are certainties, you know, a lot of people play fantasy baseball. I'm not a big fantasy baseball guy.
I'm not either.
And one of the things that you would argue is the great certainties of the sport would be Albert Pujols for a decade. Like, there were things that I assume about him. And it is so hard to find things, even in flaws in his game, that when he didn't hit last year, I literally, that was the first time in, you know, Billy and Jim Larritz will both laugh. That's the first time I was at a loss for words, because that absolutely, absolutely boggled my mind. I still can't get over that.
Well, is anybody, before we get to the Yankees here, is anybody surprising you so far? You see the Royals are out to a 6-3 start. I know it's only 9 games into the season, but they're in first place in the Central. Oakland has won 7 straight after losing their first two. They're 7-2 out
Atlanta,
west.
Yeah.
Right, and Atlanta is just storming through the NL East, but anyone would if they had Florida on or Miami on the schedule early on. So is there anything in your eyes, Seth, that has really made them saucer big so far in the major leagues?
Well, this is, I think, the rule. You know, we're not even at tax day yet, you know.
Right.
I think that if you change your expectations on what you've seen so far, I think that you're making a mistake. You know, whatever you thought in spring training would probably be dead on. I can give you a couple
of examples. I agree with you. And, you know, to me, talk to me July 31st. That's when I want to talk about where my team
far.
Is and what's going on.
That's a long time out. I usually use Memorial Day. I always say Memorial Day, first of all, baseball should have all-day games on Memorial Day. And when you're sitting there watching, you know, 17 games and, you know, doing the barbecue, I always think that's the day to check, you know, do the litmus test on your team. And my argument, and the perfect example, the Braves, you know, even though they've won 8 of their first 9 games, they lost 2 relievers, and they might be benching B.J. Upton. So, again, they've won 8 of 9. The Yankees were considered lifeless and lead the American League in runs scored. You know what I'm saying? There's so much going on here. The Colorado Rockies got out to a 5-1 start, but then they lost 3 straight. The Houston Astros, in their first 4 games, struck out 50% of the time and just thumped the Seattle Mariners, who people think are improved, 11-0.
Yeah.
So, again, tell me what's predictable about this season so far.
Well, thanks for setting it up, because, you know, everybody said the Yankees lost all their home run power, which they did. 195 of the 245 major league leading home runs last year off this team, whether it's free agency or due to injury. But the Yankees so far this year, now heading into last night before they got rained out, they were tied atop the league with Oakland and Colorado. Right now, as we sit here before they get into the game with the Indians tonight, they've fallen into a tie for second with 15 team home runs. Oakland hit one last night, so they have 16 now. But you just
that
can't...
joke was better yesterday than I knew I should have done
yesterday. You just can't make this stuff up, Seth. You know, who thought, you know, 6 days ago, Robinson Cano be batting 111, and now he's batting over 300. You know, you don't think Travis Hafner is going to bat over 300, but he is. Kevin Youkilis is not going to cover off the ball, and I don't get the disdain that Yankee fans have for this guy. I understand that he was a Red Sox. Grow up. He's like Seinfeld said, we root for clothing. We root for laundry. He is now on your team. Why are you rooting against this guy? But anyway, the Yankees, I know they're 4-4. I know they're in Cleveland right now, and Cleveland has a ton of problems. It's basically Justin Masterson and the Pips on their pitching staff. So I don't know really what to take out of this, and like you said, Memorial Day is a good litmus test. But the Yankees are turning some heads. That patchwork lineup that they put that are putting out there every night, they're hitting the ball. And, you know, if they get the pitching like they're supposed to get, these guys last year won 95 games. If they could keep their heads above water until all the guys come back from injury, I think they'll be right in the thick of things, Seth.
Well, there's a couple of things about that. The first one is you were at the ballpark, though, on opening day when that team fell behind 4-0 in the second inning and looked lifeless. So
let me rephrase, okay, Your Honor, can I rephrase? I'm not saying that the Yankees are going to win the World Series. I'm not saying that the Yankees are destined to make the playoffs this year. All I'm saying is that when they get to the point in their season where it's put up or shut up, I believe they'll be around, and I believe they'll be in the hunt. I talked to Jim Lehrer. It's another one of your – it was like the Seth Everett reunion week on the Off the Wall podcast. But Lehrer, and I tend to agree with him, said, you know, the wild cards are probably going to come from the other divisions. You know, where you've always had the wild card coming from the AL East, he thinks – that it's going to take 86 to 89 games to win the division, and you're only going to get one team out of this division into the playoffs because it's so competitive. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't always agree. I think one of the wild cards will come from the West and the other will come from the East. The teams in the Central, I'm picking the Tigers again by default. Let's address the Yankees. First of all, I want to state that I will not be the guy that pronounces the demise of the Yankees, not because I'm on a Yes Network podcast. I have done it over the last 16 years four times. Four times I have come out publicly and said, that's it, this is the end of the run, this is the end of the era. They have made the playoffs all four of those times, and in 2009 won the damn World Series.
Right.
So I will not be that guy. For all the people who kept saying in spring training, this team is a shell of itself, and okay, there's no way they can compete, I just said, let's just let this thing play out. Let's just see where this goes. Now, there's two things about the American League East that I would establish. Number one, I think all five teams are darn good. I think all five teams could win 85 games. Now, I'm going to contradict myself in saying they probably won't because they play each other so darn much.
Right.
But all five teams, if I'm going to sit there and put a number on all five of those teams, what separates you from 85 to 89 to 81 is probably how you're going to do 1-5 in the American League East. Because what's the reality is Boston's better. There's no secret about that. Toronto's better, but they have so many flaws, and all of them have been exposed in 10 days. You look at Tampa and you say, that's a team that still can compete, although the Jeff Niemann injury hurts. And then you throw in Baltimore, who I still believe, and I picked them to win, I still think is the class of that division, but by a hair. I don't think they're that great. I don't even think they got better than last year. But you're talking about teams that are going to compete and beat each other up, and that's why a good week can change your perspective on everything. And to tell you the truth, whatever happens at the trade deadline will probably decide the American League East. But I do think one of the wild cards can come from the AL East. I don't think that, you know, if you look at it, I don't think Texas is that great. I know Seattle's improved, but they're still probably behind the eight ball. If you think about the West, it's what? It's Anaheim and Oakland. Anaheim, Oakland, and then the two AL East, and then the, you know, whatever the second team in the AL East is, probably the wild card.
Right, and I just got this as an aside. You posted on Facebook that you were going to be on the podcast with me, and Billy Sample commented, Seth, be easy on me. I still have the pictures. I don't know what that means.
He has no pictures.
I don't want you to go into that, but yeah, Billy Sample checking in.
For those of you who listened to Billy talk about Reunion 108, I just want to tell you I saw Reunion 108. And Reunion 108 is a unique perspective from a big leaguer, unless you've spent hours driving in a car across the Grapefruit League with him, because I know how Reunion 108, every one of the stories that are told, I know how they end, because I heard this sitting in the back seat of that damn rental car.
You know what? That makes me want to see it even more because I don't know how those stories end, and I'm a little envious of you right there. But, you know, I'm not envious of you when it comes to the ice, my friend, because your team is hurting. I'm trying to squeeze everything into this half hour. So let's get to hockey before we get to the NBA really quick. And I wanted to get hockey first because who knows if we'll get to the NBA. But your Devils are on an 8-game losing streak. And I'm not rubbing it in or anything because my team has nothing locked up either. And they have a huge game where there'll probably be more fights in the stands than there are on the ice on Saturday night in Long Island when the Rangers take on the Islanders, basically with the playoffs hanging in the balance. And the Islanders have a big game tonight against Boston up in Boston. But the Devils have lost 8 straight. Boston got them last night 5-4. Spirited comeback by your boys. I have to give them that. But, you know, they haven't been on a losing streak this big since the 1984-85 season. I know they've lost Kovalchuk. I know they've lost Brodeur for a time. But what has been the problem with the Devils this year?
The problem is offense. And it's like a pitcher who pitches too tight because he knows that if he gives up a run, his team's not going to be able to come back. I honestly think the Devils' formula is exactly that. They'll fall behind 1-0, and they will start pressing because this team never replaced Parise and Sakura. And, you know, then you take Kovalchuk out of the mix, and it's just it's not an offensive team. So what teams were doing to the Devils, what the Devils used to do to other teams, which is get a 1 or 2 goal lead and just collapse on them, and you beat them. And I hate to say it, but it is that easy a formula. And I don't think that it's a streak where your team is as bad as they're playing. But in a short season, they're going to run out of time. They're not going to have enough time to recover from this. And that's a shame because you only have a finite number of years for Brodeur.
Right.
And this is one of your years. That was the argument about the Yankees is how do you not put the 2013 Yankees together better? You have Rivera. And it's the same concept. You know, Rivera and Brodeur have a parallel careers, have exactly parallel careers, except for one off the field incident that Brodeur dealt with that Rivera never did. But other than that, their lives are exactly the same. The championships, the records, the revolutionized their position. Mariano Rivera and Martin Brodeur are exactly the same. And if I only get them for a short amount of time, I have to make the supporting cast as good as it can be.
The only difference is, and let's give Brodeur some credit, he's on the ice.
Well, he cheated on his wife.
I'm talking about on the ice. He's on the ice for 60 minutes. He's between the posts the whole game. He doesn't come in, you know, in the last 3 minutes of the game. I'm not lessening what Mariano does because it's the most pressure-packed situation in the world, and you're doing it for the New York Yankees. So what he's been able to do with that under one ERA in the postseason with an 8-1 record, it's just unbelievable what Mo's done as well. But I like that comparison. That's a pretty good one because what they've both meant to their respective teams has been everything.
Sure.
Because I don't think without Brodeur, I don't think the Devils have those 3 Stanley Cup championships.
Of course
I just
not.
Don't think they do. No matter what talent they had on the ice, if they don't have that backstop, they don't have those Stanley Cup trophies, which you and Auriemma will fall back on, even though, you know, if my Rangers make the playoffs this year, you know, even if you guys miss out, you'll say, yeah, how many cups have you won since 1940? Yeah, thanks.
Well, I'll tell you
and you've
a story
won
about,
3.
I'll answer your question, then I'll tell you a story about rivalries. Your question is dead on. The aspect of Brodeur, I mean, but you could also argue who's the greatest closer of all time, who's the greatest goalie of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, you could make that argument. I'm not saying their positions are the same, and I'm not even saying their sports are remotely the same.
I've seen some good ones throughout my time. I've seen Eddie Belfour. I've seen Patrick Waugh, who's unbelievable.
But Brodeur
Marty Brodeur. I understand that. But until Brodeur got there, Waugh was pretty impressive.
I'll tell you a great story about rivalries. Because in hockey, the only team I publicly root for are the Devils. I don't publicly root for a baseball team. I don't want it to compromise my objectivity. But in hockey, I don't work in hockey, and that's why I root publicly. And I also moved to New Jersey the same day the Devils did from Colorado in 1982. So I'm a Devils fan. And a couple of years ago, I wound up getting invited to the Winter Classic in Philadelphia, the Rangers and the Flyers. And I'm fascinated with these sports, and I love the story about Yankee Stadium possibly getting an outdoor game next year that's not on New Year's Day. But this
that would be tremendous.
I was so excited about the idea of watching a Winter Classic, so I went, and the Phillies did it really right. Like Halliday or Cliff Lee or one of those guys came out and threw out the first pitch before the hockey game. Like, it was really smartly done, the way they embraced the two sports. And then they dropped the puck, and somebody comes up to me and says, "So who are you rooting for in this?" I said, "Honestly, I'm hoping for a 0-0 tie and a couple of broken ankles."
Spoken like a true Devil fan. Yeah.
Right, the Rangers are playing the Flyers, and I'm watching it in person. I said, this is the worst possible scenario for me at all.
Really quick, I want to get your thoughts on the Nets and Knicks. We have about 4 minutes left, so let's jam this in here.
Okay.
You covered the Nets for WFAN, and you still have your hand on the pulse of the Nets as well as the Knicks. You're just everywhere, as I mentioned at the top. But as it looks right now, the Knicks could actually help the Nets out tonight with a win over the Bulls. The Nets would be up 4 with 4 to go for that 4 seed in home court in the first round against Chicago. They're 1-3 against the Bulls this year, but they've lost those three games by an average of 4.2 points. And their one win, Boozer and Noah didn't play, though. So what are your thoughts on the Nets and Bulls in the first round of the NBA playoffs there, Seth?
Well, I think home court would help, and I think that we all know that the Bulls are not what the Bulls are capable of. And
without D-Rose, yeah.
Well, and what they did was they made a conscious decision, not that they're mortgaging the season, but that they know full well what their expectation level is, whereas the Nets are trying to prove that, you know, the regular season record is not the indicator of who the best team in New York is. And stuff that you only hear in basketball. I mean, you talk about rivalries, like, you know, just to show you the difference, you know, the Rangers and Islanders, I haven't seen one bit of marketing around Rangers-Islanders at the asbestos-filled Nassau Coliseum.
Yeah,
and yet,
I can't believe it.
And yet you can't hear these NBA teams stop talking about how much they we're the best team, we're New York's team, well, this is New York's team. It's obnoxious. And I think that ultimately when you find it, you know, for both of this year, I'm not picking on any one team, but the reality of it is that, you know, you're ultimately going to be judged by how far you go. And I think that it's something that you can regionalize because of the existence of the Heat. I don't think it's smart for any Knicks fan or Nets fan to say, you know what, my goal is to get to the NBA Finals and win that darn sucker. Well, no. You can feel that way if you're the Denver Nuggets, if you're the Oklahoma City Thunder, if you're the Spurs. You can't feel that way if you're in the Eastern Conference. Your goal is to be the best of the rest. And I think that's exactly what the Knicks and Nets are. They're contenders for the best of the rest. And I don't think any one of them hold a candle to the Heat. And I think what the Heat have done is very interesting, because that win streak actually helped them, because they actually were playing at a peak level for a good long time. And now they've gone into full-on shutdown mode. And
yeah,
they're going to have to flip a switch. And one NBA, you know, Chris Sheridan made this great point to me on a radio show, and he said all they'd have to do is lose one of the first two seven-game series, you know, one of the first two games of a seven-game series, and you'll see the Heat come back with a vengeance. So it's just interesting to see, because in baseball, a lot of times, you know, when you win too early, it's considered a negative. In basketball, I wonder if it's the same thing.
Well, we will find out. Seth, I thank you for coming on. I thank you for your time, and hopefully, you know, we can make this not a weekly thing because you're so busy, but definitely a couple times a month. I mean, I'm on every day now with this off-the-wall podcast by myself.
If you knew how much I had to clear just to get to you.
Well, as I said in my text to you, brother, I really appreciate the time because, you know, you're one of the best guests we have because you could go across – well, no, you could go across the entire spectrum of the sporting world, and you're so knowledgeable in everything that it's so nice to get you on. And I do it a lot for the fans because they get such a diverse and, you know, if as I tweeted out yesterday, the sports category in Jeopardy, it was pretty much sports potpourri with Seth Everett today. So I appreciate the time. Thanks for coming on. Hopefully we get you on again down the line, and maybe it'll be with our buddy, Mr. Oriema, the other Devils fan.
Yeah, well, he's probably enjoying the fact that he has a seat because he's always sitting down whenever I see him. And we can title this podcast, Riding in the Car with Billy Smith.
All right, brother. Best of luck to you the rest of this NBA NHL season with your teams. I know you don't have an NBA team, but best of luck to that team, whoever it is, and your baseball team as well.
Right.
All right. Yeah, we'll talk to you down the line. That's Seth Everett. We'll see you next time on Off the Wall. Hey, buddy.
Is it over?